Thank you so much to Happy Mammoth for sponsoring this episode of Making Moves.
I don't know about you guys, but every time I'm PMSing, I feel beyond off. Like, something is not right when I'm PMSing. And ever since I started Hormone Harmony, I swear it has changed my life.
Like, I'm not even kidding you. Before I experienced Hormone Harmony, I was getting the most insane cravings, bloating, feeling super off randomly, and even sometimes not getting good quality sleep. And y'all know how important sleep is to me. Like, it is my number one thing. So I wanted to take the reins on my health, specifically my hormone health. And that's why I started taking Hormone Harmony.
Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. It has zero sugar and is gluten-free, dairy-free, non-GMO, and third-party tested. And the biggest benefit? Feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over in their reviews. There are over 17,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony.
If you don't know what Hormone Harmony is, let me just tell you. It supports hormonal balance and regulation, supports cortisol, estrogen, improves sleep quality, reduces occasional bloating and gas. It even can relieve mood swings. Any woman with symptoms of hormonal imbalances can take it.
For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code MOVES at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use code MOVES, M-O-V-E-S, code MOVES for 15% off today.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Making Moves. I'm here today with the very talented James Morosini.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good.
I'm welcome just to the
noticing
studio.
This. I like it.
Thank you.
It's like someone's shooting you with money,
mm-hmm.
but well, it's not fun. I mean, it is fun. It's not like it's not lethal money.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like, you know, we're making business moves, money moves, dating
right.
moves on
right.
this podcast. So, you know, it's a little on
I
theme.
Wish that's how I was paid. Someone's like, all right, you've made your money.
That would be epic.
Yeah, they came to your house and they're like, all right.
And they're like, here's your check for the month.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Anyway, I was going to explain your title, but I feel like you do like 80 million different things. So do you want to explain what the heck you do? Because you do so many different things.
I guess I consider myself a filmmaker. I was going to say I consider myself a storyteller, but there's something about that that makes me kind of cringe.
No, you really are, though.
I make movies and I act.
Mm-hmm.
And that pretty much sums it up.
Mm-hmm. And where are you
from? Like, give me the little brief elevator pitch. Like, where are you from? How did you get to where you are in, like, 2 minutes?
Okay, 2 minutes.
Yeah. All right. Or I'll give you five.
I grew up outside of Boston.
Mm-hmm.
I went to USC for theater and film.
Okay. Undergrad?
Undergrad, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I grew up making, like, always making movies and shorts with friends and stuff.
Mm.
Went to USC, did a lot of theater, continued making a lot of shorts.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I graduated USC, I continued making stuff. I made, like, a web series that was, like, a catalog of awkward moments.
Mm-hmm.
Each episode was, like, a different super awkward moment.
Oh, that's great for, like, a digital series.
It was fun. And then after that, I made my first movie, Three Something.
Mm-hmm.
And then most recently, I made I Love My Dad. That's been my creative trajectory.
Got
In about 2 minutes. Yeah.
So growing up in Boston, did you, like, were you a theater kid? Or did you, how'd you get into it? Or how did you know you liked or you wanted to make movies?
My uncle was the actor Christopher Reeve.
Oh, wow.
Played Superman.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so I was kind of, I just, like, looked up to him a lot growing up.
Uh-huh.
And then I was always just making, like, dumb jackass kind of videos. Like, I was a big fan of CKY
mm-hmm.
growing up, which is, like, pre-Jackass. And so I was making a lot of those kind of videos. Like, I would, when there'd be fights at my high school, I would always
film
them. Or if I was, sometimes I had... would be in a fight and
oh, wow.
They were planned, but we would film them and, mm-hmm. and then I would, like, edit them together.
You're, like, staging fights for the content.
Yeah. 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 I don't do that anymore.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And then I was, you know, I was, like, in video. I never really did theater growing up though.
Mm-hmm.
Did you do theater?
Not really. I was more of, like, I grew up in a sports family. So that's why I'm always very impressed with, like, people in the arts, because I'm like, I feel like I didn't have that natural integration into that. Whereas, like, my parents were like, play basketball or, like, do you know what I mean? Like, play tennis.
I wrestled, I boxed, and then I was making these videos. Mm-hmm. And then once I graduated high school, I started doing theater.
Okay.
The first play I ever did was a play with Peter Dinklage, actually.
Oh, wow.
It's called Knickerbocker.
Oh, wow.
In Western Massachusetts at a theater festival. I had a really small part in it, but it, like, being around all those folks really, I started to really enjoy it. And I mean, the cool thing about theater is you're spending so much time on the same story. And so you really, I don't know. I prefer it acting wise.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, there's fewer opportunities to do it out here.
Got it. Yeah. I know. I feel like once you're here, things just, like, fall into place or opportunities come you wouldn't really imagine.
Yeah.
But did you think USC was worth it?
Worth it in what sense?
Like, do you feel like you could be where you are now?
I think I probably would be.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think it was also really, I learned a ton. I mean, just being in that environment where you're spending, I was spending 4 years just, like, really geeking out on film. And
it's a very lucrative program.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely learned a lot. And, there, you know, they'd have screening series. I would go to all of the movies that they'd show, and they'd have people come in and talk.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like I was learning a ton about just how to make movies throughout my time there. And then I was also doing many of the plays, and, you know, I met some of my best friends there.
Mm-hmm.
I made a movie before I Love My Dad that I worked on with someone I met there. And the first big acting job I got was from someone that I met at USC.
Oh, wow.
For a Comedy Central pilot. Mm-hmm. He had directed a movie when he was at USC, and then that got turned into a pilot. And we did that for Comedy Central right out of the gate.
Got it. I was going to ask, did you have anyone from your days at USC that you had help you with I Love My Dad?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. I feel like sometimes that's common.
Yeah. No, I don't really have any collaborators now that I went to school with.
But definitely.
Yeah. I mean, it was useful. It was like, I mean, just also, you know, I was learning about a lot of other things besides film, just exploring my other interests. And I think it was useful for that
What do you feel like was the biggest takeaway from going like through that program? Because it's, I feel like it's so lucrative, it's so expensive, and it's like kind of on a pedestal in my head, like going to USC for film.
So I was going there for theater, and then I was taking a lot of film classes. I think the biggest takeaway was probably, I mean, just going to all those screenings, really. I was going to, like, you know, it became almost like a practice of showing up to the theater and then just like really zeroing in on like I started to just get more and more used to doing that as a practice, and it's one I still do. Like, going to the movies is something that is still really important to me. Like, last night I went to see Jaws in 3D at the Academy Museum, and it was I mean, it's kind of my it's the closest thing to a religion I think I'll ever
have. It's like going to the gym almost. Totally. Like, practice.
It is.
Wait, why is that so important to you, going to a movie?
The idea of just concentrating on one story without looking at my phone and really like letting myself sink into it. It's a great question. Why is it so important? I think just the level of concentration to the story that you're able to achieve when that's the only thing you're focused on, and that you're watching it with all these other people, and experiencing the story with all these other people. I think it just like permeates in a deeper way than when you're watching it on streaming and you're at your house and you're checking
your
phone.
I'm like halfway on my phone.
A lot of the time, or you're just distracted. You have the ability to pause at any time. I mean, I had never seen Jaws in a theater before, but it helped me to re-understand why Spielberg is one of the greatest. I don't know. It's such a patient movie, but it's also so entertaining. I'm gonna bore your audience.
I'm very impressed by this, or I'm interested. It kind of reminds me of because I said, I grew up in a sports family, so you know when athletes watch their film to rewatch the plays and decide, you know, what they should do better, or, you know, to literally study it. I'm wondering, do you go into movies that you've seen before and kind of study it, or like see it through a different lens? Because sometimes I'll rewatch stuff and I'll like pay attention to the editing more, or like the titles or the comedic timing, just because I'm like thinking, how can I be inspired by this, like, for my own content? Is that how you kind of watch it too?
Yeah, I do. It's funny you say that. So I was reading this book that this Stoic philosopher Seneca wrote last night. It's called Letters to a Stoic.
Okay.
And it's from 50 AD or something. And he's, in one of his letters that I was looking at last night, he's talking about, he's encouraging the person he's writing to read the same book, not try to read every book, but just spend time on some of the books you've either read before or books from the greats, and just really dive depth as opposed to breadth. And I was thinking about that in how it relates to the way I consume movies.
That is interesting.
Where I try to spend just more time with fewer movies as opposed to try to see every movie.
Okay.
Because you start to just see how a story is being told, and how deliberately it's being told. And when you make a movie, you're seeing it. You know, I've seen my film I Love My Dad probably hundreds of times at this point. And you, every single decision is so calibrated toward the audience's experience. And so then it helps you kind of understand how other filmmakers are making their decisions, and it helps you appreciate just the slightest decisions. When they're there, you appreciate them, and when they're not careful, you see that too, and you're like, "Huh, that's weird. Why did they decide to do that?"
It's like you're breaking down everything.
Totally.
Wow, so interesting. I'm rewatching Game of Thrones right now, and I feel like I'm having a lot of those realizations. I'm like, whoa, I never noticed this the first time I watched it and whatnot.
Are you watching House of Dragons?
Yes. Are you?
I'm really into it.
I know. I am too. I love the actor, the girl.
I know. She's great.
Yeah. I don't know her real name, but she's fabulous.
I know.
Very impressive.
I'm really into it.
I know. Did you watch Thrones?
I loved it.
Okay.
Yeah,
me too. HBO's slamming it right now.
They're slamming it.
Yeah, they're slamming it. Thank you so much to Apartments.com for sponsoring this episode of Making Moves. Apartments.com believes a dishwasher does more than just clean plates. It turns your whole place into a time machine by turning the time you would have spent washing dishes into extra time for you. That could mean more time to read, more time to knit, or more time to contemplate the vastness of time itself. With Apartments.com, finding somewhere to live with an elusive dishwashing/time-expanding device is easy. Apartments.com hosts the most rental listings with over 1 million available units. And with comprehensive search tools and instant alerts, you never have to worry about missing out on the perfect place. To find whatever you're searching for and more, visit Apartments.com, the place to find a place.
The one thing that has kept me sane throughout the 75 Hard Challenge, and more importantly, has kept me hydrated the most, is Liquid IV. Y'all, when I tell you, I literally crave Liquid IV. Like, the lemon lime flavor lives rent-free in my head. First of all, it just always quenches my thirst, but it is perfectly sour and has that tangy taste to it, and it's just so good. Like a nice, cold, crisp glass of Liquid IV. Oh my gosh, mwah! Sounds so good. Whether you hydrate to live or live to hydrate, Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. With 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drinks, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness, all in a single sugar-free stick. So I actually just taste tested all of the flavors for you guys, the pear, the white peach, the green grape, and the lemon lime. And I have to tell you, I still think lemon lime is my favorite. But my second favorite is green grape. And then my third favorite, believe it or not, is pear. I'm actually shocked by how much I like pear. And then in fourth place for me was the white peach. My favorite thing about Liquid IV is how convenient it is, especially because I am always on the go. I am booked and busy, and I'm sure you guys are too. So being able to pack it so easily in a purse or a carry-on or whatever the case is, like my work bag, I always have a Liquid IV in there because throughout my day, I get so thirsty and nothing truly satisfies my thirst craving other than a Liquid IV. Like, it is so good. I literally want to make one right now. And listen, drinking water is great. Like, I've been drinking so much water while doing the 75 Hard Challenge, but one stick of Liquid IV in 16 ounces of water hydrates you way better than water alone. And I love it because I feel like it actually revives me. And the best part about it is that there's no artificial sweeteners and zero sugar. However you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier, sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco, or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code TK at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop better hydration today using promo code TK at liquidiv.com.
I want to do a quick game. It's called Hot Seat. So basically, I'm going to put you in the hot seat. I'm going to ask you, you know, rapid fire questions.
Okay. Hopefully it's not too hot. But...
okay. Yeah. Hopefully it's not too hot. First one is, what's your favorite movie of all time?
Oh, gosh. It's already, I mean, probably The Godfather. Other than that, it'd be like Apocalypse Now. My favorite obscure movie is a movie called The Bear. It's a French film. And there's pretty much no dialogue throughout. And, like, the main – it's just about a bear. And, like, it's all from the perspective of this bear. And they got a they got a real bear to be in the movie. And it's beautiful and so compelling. And they, like – you understand what the bear is thinking the whole time and, like, how it's navigating the environment. And it's just –
Is there dialogue?
Later on in the movie, some hunters appear and there's dialogue from the hunters. But other than that, it's like the bear, and like at one point the bear eats wild mushrooms and then so is like tripping out and parts are become animated. It's awesome.
Wow. Okay. What would you say is your favorite movie that's like a little bit embarrassing to admit though? Like another good movie. Like mine would probably be like Cheaper by the Dozen.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? You're
yeah,
like,
I would say
kind of my guilty pleasure.
Freddy Got Fingered.
Okay, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, it's a Tom Green movie that's like, it's just like it's just all over the place, but it's kind of genius in its own way. I mean, other than that, the movie I've probably seen more than any other movie. You know how back in the day you'd order a movie and you'd get it for like 48 hours?
Yes.
And that was the only movie, like it would just like play over and over. I remember one time I ordered Dude, Where's My Car?
Iconic. Is that Ashton Kutcher?
It is, yeah. And Sean William Scott. And I remember my mom just kept, like, just left me in a room while she was doing her thing. And I just watched Dude, Where's My Car? I think, like, I feel like I watched it for, like, a full day.
It's a classic.
Yeah, but, like, that, I mean, so I feel like I've seen that movie more than any other movie. I don't know if I would still dig it, but...
recite it.
Other than that, I'd say like Never Ending Story.
Okay. I haven't seen that either. You're inspiring me.
It's a beautiful movie. Okay. I love it.
Next one. What is your ideal character to play in a movie? I guess other than yourself.
My ideal character to play in. I like playing things that are subverting something we've seen before. The thing that I would love to play is like a really insecure superhero, or like somebody who's like really messed up and is like, I don't know. I like subverting things that already exist.
Like seeing the other side.
Yeah. Just seeing like what's a layer to an iconic kind of character or archetype and like what's right beneath the surface. I think I'm excited most by that.
So interesting. Okay, cool. I love that. If you didn't play yourself in I Love My Dad, who would be your dream person to play you?
I think Lucas Hedges is really talented. Or there's that kid, I forget his name, the kid from Ozark.
Okay.
I'm blanking on his name.
I don't know the name either.
He's super talented. I mean, I talked to a lot of great actors. Christopher Mintz-Plasse would have been great.
Well, I saw you in an interview or like a Q&A after your screening, you were saying that you thought about, or you tried to have people play you, and then you guys ultimately decided you would be best.
Yeah, we decided it was just more interesting to watch the person on screen knowing that a version of what's happened to them.
Yeah.
I'd never seen that before, and so I was
actually insane.
Yeah, I was kind of just creatively excited by that, and I wanted to I don't know, I'm always drawn to like what the riskiest creative decision is going to be, and that path just felt the most exciting to me.
Got it. Okay. What subject did you thrive in school?
Not many. I mean probably English, or video. Like I took video class, and that was just us.
It was like a media type. Okay.
Essentially.
Like a school news.
It was more.
We had that.
were you on that? Did you do that? That's awesome.
We like gave the school news.
Oh, wow. There's usually not that much news to get into school, right? I mean, what would you say? You'd be like, we won the weather.
Yeah. We won the pep rally game.
Right.
Stuff like
signing
that.
Signing off. Probably video class. I would just be we'd go off and make stupid little shorts and stuff.
Got it. I love that.
Yeah.
What is your phone wallpaper and can you explain it?
Yeah. It's pretty geeky and embarrassing. that's a great question though. Okay. So it's basically like, when you're a filmmaker, you're essentially freelance. So you don't know necessarily exactly what you're going to do every day. And so my phone wallpaper is basically, I don't know if you can see it. It's like, it's not showing up, but it's basically a breakdown of like if I don't have anything going on that day, what an ideal day would look like.
Whoa.
Like hour by hour, which is
so super. It's like a screenshot from your notes app?
It's like a screenshot from, like I broke down like an ideal day.
What's an ideal day for you?
I'll tell you. I mean, it's like it's like writing for 3 to 4 hours.
Okay.
And then like doing work and then like watching a movie or reading something that that's inspiring.
What's doing work?
I guess like reaching out to if I'm
like
trying
email.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Like think like I like. I mean, I feel best about my days when I've spent like 3 to 4 hours in a state of deep concentration on whatever I'm trying to move forward creatively and really spending time where I'm not distracted by anything.
Got it.
So I try to preserve that time as much as I can. But then, you know, I need parts of my day that are reserved for like if I'm trying to produce a film or if I'm trying to just get something going. I try to be deliberate about my time in that way.
Like
I'm not
creative and analytical.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Do you, when you're writing for 3 to 4 hours, can you like kind of explain to me what that means? Like, are you following a prompt? Are you just letting your hand go? Or are you typing? Like, give me the deets.
I love it. It's different depending on where I am.
Okay.
With each project, and honestly, that's a question that I'm always having to ask myself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what does the work literally look like today? What I try to do is at the beginning of committing to a project, I try to break down the workflow for myself. So sometimes I'll spend a week just brainstorming or exploring a concept or doing just like imaginative research, which looks like me sitting at the park and just thinking about where the story could go and what I'm compelled by within the story. And then I'll spend a week or so, and this varies, but like sitting in my office and putting cards up on the wall and seeing like structurally how the story's gonna be best told. And once I have that, it's just like iterating and getting more and more specific about that until I can really see the whole movie in my head, almost the whole movie. I need to know like the beginning, the middle, and the end, and a couple like turning points throughout. And once I have that, I'll go to draft, and then I'll just try to give myself permission to write the worst possible version of the movie.
Yeah.
And I'll just I write it pretty much just for myself.
Okay.
Where I'm like, I'm not worrying about making it perfect in any way. I just try to.
That's really good. That's
a
good tactic.
I try to just be that first pass. I just try to be a complete madman when I'm going through it and just like exploring every possible corner.
Mm.
And those drafts usually end up being many, many more pages than anything else.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that's when the juice comes out.
Totally.
The tea.
Yeah.
Okay. Writing, directing, acting. Acting, excuse me. Choose one. Like, what are you best at?
It's hard to say. I kind of see them all as the same thing in a weird way.
Okay.
Yeah. I see them as like a little bit of an arbitrary distinction. I'm probably best at, I don't know. Hard to say. It's so hard to say. I see them as
James,
the same. I see them as the same thing.
Okay.
It's so project dependent.
But
I mean,
what if you had to do one for the rest of your life?
Like only do that one?
Yeah.
Oh God. I don't know. I don't know what I would do. I don't know. I really.
Okay.
I don't know if it's like picking children. I don't know. It's Sophie's choice of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you a cat or dog person?
I'm a cat person.
Okay.
Yeah.
What?
But I like to. I don't know. I'm just a.
Do you have a cat?
I have two cats.
Okay.
Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, I'm a cat person because they're less. They need less for me.
They're like less maintenance.
Yeah. And I don't know. I love how sensitive cats are.
Okay.
And how they're like super receptive to their environment. Like I can spend a lot of time just like watching my cat and just like seeing how they're responding to the environment. I don't know why.
I feel like this makes sense to me. Like you love telling intricate, intriguing stories. And I feel like that if a cat were a filmmaker, that's the type of story it would tell versus a dog. It would be like, beginning, end.
Totally.
You know
totally.
What I mean? They're like a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean they're
complex.
They're hyper sensitive to everything. So like, we might not notice something in our environment, but when you're watching a cat, you're seeing them react to the smallest, you know, the slightest subtlety in their environment. Like,
okay,
you know, you hear a really far away small sound and you watch their ears turn. Like, they're so hyper vigilant,
intuitive,
to their environment and what's going on. And I think when you're telling stories, you kind of have to be that way. I find myself in a similar state where I'm like, I'm really trying to hone in on the story I'm trying to tell and all the nuance around it. And I'm like trying to hypersensitize myself to it.
Yeah. That's a great answer. Okay. Where do you order food from the most?
I really like Sugarfish or Tender Greens.
What do you get from Tender Greens?
I usually get the Pacific Salmon Bowl.
Love that bowl.
It's very good.
It's so good. You know what like impresses me with that bowl is like the random like squash.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm like, whoa, this is like a fun surprise.
I know.
It's like adds a little color.
It's a very dynamic bowl.
Okay. Would you say, I feel like I know the answer to this, would you say you're more creative or analytical?
Oh, gosh. You know, it really depends on the day and where I'm, like, what stage of a process I'm in. Like, when I'm trying to produce a project, I'm in a
analytical zone.
Yeah, I'm in like chess mode. I feel like I'm trying to figure out how to actually get it done.
I love that. I'm gonna start saying that. I'm in chess mode.
Yeah.
Don't bother me.
Yeah, I'm like, all right, how do I make these plays to actually accomplish this goal? But then when I'm like trying to and it's funny, my personality will completely shift depending on which mode I'm in. Like if I'm in a creative mode, I'm just all over the place.
I can't be analytical when I'm like in my creative mode.
No, same. I mean, I feel like a different person. But then when I'm in kind of a more strategic headspace, it's almost like I find my attention like narrows and I become like just a lot more literal as I'm like, all right, you know, I become like more serious and less playful.
Yeah. I love that. Okay. What's your favorite show to binge?
I mean, I watch Sopranos over and over and over.
I need to watch it. I've never seen it.
It's the best show ever made.
I think.
I mean, it's like so comforting to me. I don't totally know why. I don't know. I can literally watch it from beginning to end. Oh, I've probably seen it beginning to end like three or four times.
Okay.
I need to watch it. It's the best.
And then last hot seat question. What is your favorite movie snack when you're at the theater?
Movie snack? I mean, probably popcorn. Yeah.
It's a classic for a reason.
Yeah. I mean, I like popcorn because you can never, it's like, you just have to keep eating it. I don't know. That's a stupid. Like it's like it doesn't. You don't satiate your appetite with like you.
Yeah.
You want more until you've had too much.
It's like a fun little just. It's like the act of doing this.
Totally.
Like I don't know. It's fun.
And you're also like participating in this like iconic activity. In a way that
and you're doing, you're doing the right thing.
You're doing like the movie. You're like, I'm eating popcorn at the movie. Like
you're playing the part.
Yeah, you're totally playing the part.
That's so true. It feels like almost illegal to be like eating anything else when you're in a theater.
I know. You're like, you're like, this feels weird.
It feels wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess unless it's like candy or something. I don't know. But
like if you were eating a cheeseburger in a movie theater, it wouldn't make sense.
Right. I mean, there's something about. You're eating popcorn at the movies and you're like, you feel like it helps you like feel more in it, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Unless somebody, like I can't really go see movies with my mom because she will eat the popcorn super loud.
Yeah.
And so I'll have to move.
Yeah. You're like, I can't listen to the chewing.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a wrap on our hot seat round. Great job. Congrats.
It was a warm seat.
Yeah. It was a warm seat. Yeah.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed.
Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, I want to talk about the obvious movie you just made, I Love My Dad. I watched it. It's a lot better than I ever imagined, and I knew it was going to be good. It makes you feel all the things. I feel like I can't even describe it well because it's like I'm laughing, but I'm so uncomfortable watching it. And yeah. That's like the one thing I feel like I've learned from being in LA with filmmaking. It's like you just want to make people feel something.
Totally.
And it makes you feel too much almost. You're like, oh my God, like I'm uncomfortable, but like this is great. And now I'm laughing. So explain to the listener, the viewer, what the heck I Love My Dad is. I know it's based on a true story, which is bananas. Tell me about it.
The movie is about an estranged father who is really worried about his son because his son just tried to kill himself. And he can't get in touch with him in any way that he tries. So finally, he decides to create the profile of a pretty girl to just check in on his son. He's not going to do anything. But then the son falls in love with this profile, and the dad has to keep it going because he's able to help his son through this profile. And he's also worried that if he stops talking to his son's going to go down a dark path. The movie's based on something that happened to me where I got in a big fight with my dad when I was probably 16 or so at the time. I blocked him on social media. I got home one day. This really pretty girl had sent me a friend request online.
You're like, hell yeah, best day ever.
I was super psyched. And then it turned out to be my dad.
Wow.
And my dad had created this as a way of just making sure I was okay because I was in a rocky spot. But yeah, I mean, it's a movie about somebody who's doing absolutely the wrong thing, but for the right reasons. It's fun. I wanted to create an experience where we as the audience kind of are the catfisher and we understand why he's doing this and we're kind of behind it. And at the same time, we're also the person being catfished because the girl that my character Franklin is talking to, Claudia Saluski, who plays Becca, is appearing in person for Franklin. And so we are kind of sometimes forgetting as the audience that that girl Franklin is talking to is actually his dad. And so that I wanted to kind of create that push and pull experience of being both catfisher and catfish throughout the film.
I felt the push and pull. It was bananas. Like I was audibly gasping when I was watching and my brother would like peek around the corner and be like, what's going on? Like, are you okay? Like, what happened? And then he, you know, the classic dad or like brother thing when they come in front of the TV and put their hands on their hips because they can't leave. They're like, oh, I'm kind of into this.
Totally.
That's what was happening. Like, oh, it's like, awesome. I'm not going to sit down, but I'm not going to leave.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like the dad hand on the hip. Yeah. It's like when I'm watching The Bachelor, it's like they can't leave. Well, it's also like this for I Love My Dad.
Yeah.
Okay. Question for you. When this happened to you in real life, when did you decide that you were going to make this into a movie? Like, did you always have this story in the back of your head? Like, this would be a great film.
So I've always loved comedy. I've always loved movies. Mm-hmm. And I've always been attracted to weird stories. So I remember really clearly the moment I realized that my dad had created this account. And I was very upset. And I remember the feeling in my face, this like burning of embarrassment and anger. But in the back of all that, I remember really clearly having the thought, this almost disappointing thought where I was like, I don't know if I'll ever be able to convey this story to anyone. Like, because me just telling people about it is not going to do it justice.
Uh-huh.
Like, I was blown away by my dad's audacity in creating this account. And I was like, I kind of understood why he did it. And I was like, gosh, this is just such a great, like, bit.
Yeah.
But I won't, I don't know how I'll ever tell anybody about it. So then years and years later, you know, 15 years later, whatever, I was walking in New York City with my dad, and I had kind of forgotten about this. I had never told anybody about it, other than a therapist at the time.
Makes sense.
Yeah, naturally. And I was walking my dad, and he reminded me of it. And I was looking for my next story, and it just kind of struck me as that this could be the one. And then when I realized the device of people appearing in reality in the story, that's when I knew I wanted to make this movie.
What do you mean appearing in reality?
Like in the movie, we see we're personifying the text messages.
Yes, I thought that was genius.
Thank you. As like, you know, the person that is messaging Franklin is his dad, but he's seeing the girl that the profile is represented
in real life. Yeah, like she's there.
She's appearing to him. And when I realized that that's how I wanted to execute the film, I knew that I wanted to really make it, because prior I was like, I can't have audiences just looking at phone screens for an hour and a half. So that's kind of when it clicked into place for me that mm-hmm. That's how I was going to make this film.
And was it on actual Facebook that the account was happening?
In reality?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. This is like, I mean, it's one of those stories where you're like, I can't make this shit up.
I know.
And you literally can't. Which is crazy. Okay. So what was your, I guess, first step? You have this crazy idea.
Yeah.
You're like, this happened to me. How the heck do you execute something like this, like as a filmmaker?
So whenever I'm struck by a surge of enthusiasm, I'll start putting everything I can possibly think into my notes in my phone. And I'll just start, like, I'll try to clear my brain so that none of it is existing in my head anymore. I'll try to just get as much of my creative
love.
Yeah, I'll just get it out into my phone, and it kind of clears the slate for new things to emerge.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll kind of accrete around what's already down, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it'll help me. I'll just purge creatively all of my everything that's on my brain into my phone. And then slowly, structure will begin to emerge,
mm-hmm.
where I'll be like, okay, well, what's the beginning? I'll be like, oh, that's where we start the story.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll start to understand, like, the perspective of the story. And it's really like, I try to get out of the way of the process as much as I can. And just,
oh, wow.
Like,
that's an interesting way to put it.
Yeah. And just like I'll try not to overly manipulate it. And I'll just try to, like, follow the fun of mm-hmm. whatever it is. At a certain point, that withers, and you start having to think about it in a more, you know, once you've spent months and months with the story, you're not necessarily burning with the same degree of passion that you were when you first had an idea, and you're having to think about it more, like, okay, well, what makes the most sense? But
mm-hmm.
in that beginning, I feel like I once had it described to me, like, you get that initial flash of inspiration is like a camera flash of a room,
mm-hmm.
and you have to write down as much of that room as you can remember in that moment, because it starts to fade and you start to lose the detail of that room.
Mm-hmm.
And so I when I'm first struck by an idea, I feel like it's there's an urgency to it, because it's slowly, that feeling of excitement is slowly fading
mm-hmm.
the longer and longer I wait.
That's so true.
Yeah.
And then when you're writing in your notes, Is it like, what does the note look like? Is it bullet points? I'm like a big bullet point writer. Or is it all over the place? Is it words? Is it sentences? Is it paragraphs?
It's pretty all over the place. Some of it is, some are sentences, some are bullet points, some are directives to myself. Go watch, rewatch this, read this. I'm like, sometimes I'll get insight into how I need to, how I am going to need to tell the story, what I'm going to need to tell the story.
Like a to-do list, kind of?
A to-do list. So that's sometimes in there. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of it is like just bullet points, structurally fun ideas. Mm-hmm. And then I'll try to make it as clear to myself like what I'm thinking, and I'll just kind of be rambling as much as I can. Mm-hmm. So that it's clear to me once I read it again that I know what the point of what I'm trying to say is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you, after that point, is that when you, like, the next big step is writing the script?
The next big step, I think, is to do that for as long as I can. I kind of look at it like a creative pregnancy.
Okay. No, it makes sense.
I think about it in those terms. And if you move too quickly to try to give birth to it, like, it comes out premature. So I try to cook, you know, I try to stay
pregnant, yeah,
for as long as I can, you know. But there is it's a Goldilocks zone where if you don't get it out of your system fast enough, like it kind of, here's where the pregnancy metaphor gets kind of set, but it dies.
Yeah.
You lose the it just starts feeling stale. An mm-hmm. oven is maybe a more, you know,
we're baking bread.
Yeah.
Now.
We're baking bread. Yeah. Like it could, if you don't want it undercooked and you don't want to burn it. Mm. And so you have to really, I have to like be really aware of where I am at each stage in the process, and like, I want it to feel fun and like fluid at each stage. Mm-hmm. And anytime I start to feel like, this is starting to not feel fun, I know I've either stayed in a part of the process for too long, or, you know, and sometimes you do need to just break through, but that's always like the canary in the coal mine creatively, is my level of fun mm-hmm. that I'm having. And if that starts to wane, I start to get a little bit suspicious that I'm maybe not at the stage in the process that would be ideal.
Mm-hmm. I feel like everyone has like pretty good ideas and they want to do all these things, but it's very rare when someone executes their great idea. Mm-hmm. And I feel like you've done that so well. Like, what would you say is the hardest part or the most challenging part about actually bringing this film to fruition or executing it?
I think what makes it easier for me is that I really don't like the alternative of not doing it. And I'm really afraid of the alternative of not doing it. Like, the alternative of me not making my films would be just auditioning as an actor and hoping that I get a great part, which feels like playing some weird lottery with your life.
It kind of is, yeah.
That I don't feel super comfortable doing. And I want to be able to like build these things from the ground up. Your question was,
what's the hardest part about executing, like, from idea to being on the big screen?
I think it's rewriting. Rewriting is tough because you're having to remain creative while also being analytical.
Uh-huh.
And you don't want to mess up what's already there. But you want it to be additive, and it's really easy to it is really easy to mess up what's already working and overthink things.
Mm.
Like, that first draft is one of the easiest parts for me, because you're just kind of like, let's snowplow forward through the whole story, being okay with things being wonky, having things in there that are placeholders, but just getting the shape of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you know, I have a script now where I've been working on for over a year, and it's like I'm in a rewrite part of the process where I'm like, I don't know, this part feels wonky, that part, like, oh, but if I change this, then it changes this entire storyline, and but I've already spent so much time. It starts to all feel way too precious, and you need you kind of need to like somehow let it go and let it be what it is now, as opposed to what it was when you first created it, and like it's almost like trying to rediscover like the spark in a relationship or something with the rewrite, where you're like, okay, how can I meet this story with fresh eyes, with as how I am now.
And it's like you're taking, I picture like a washcloth, and you're like wringing it out again, wringing it out again. It's hard.
That's how it feels.
I want to talk a little bit about your character, because you play yourself, and the character's name is Franklin. What are the actual differences between the character version of you, Franklin, and actually you when this was happening?
Yeah, I think they're quite different. I kind of imagine Franklin, I don't know if I saw him as myself necessarily.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he's a lot older than I was when I had this happen to me. I see Franklin being in his mid-20s. He's like still at home. Like he's a lot more messed up than I think I was at that stage of my, like, he just is terrified by moving forward with his life, and so still living at his mom's house, and is so embarrassed that he's still living at his mom's house, and he's deluding himself with these grand ambitions of being a video game coder, and so is very and knows he's kind of full of shit. And so he's humiliated, and he's very shut down to the world, and he's so vigilant about anyone lying to him or deceiving him or letting him down. But he's so hungry for any kind of connection, and he wants so badly to connect with someone, which leaves him especially vulnerable to his dad creating this account. But in terms of playing Franklin, I mean, I've struggled with anxiety and depression my entire life. And I've developed tools to navigate my own mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Franklin doesn't have those tools. So I just kind of would lean into pre-tool, like,
yeah,
and I would just go, like, I would just try to engage those thought patterns of being like hyper judgmental, very vigilant of what's happening around me. Mm-hmm. I think anytime we feel ourselves being judgmental, it's because we're scared and we're trying to get control of what's going on around us and have a position, as opposed to when we feel secure, I think we're more flexible and more like, oh, I don't know what that person's like.
Mm-hmm.
But Franklin is very locked into his perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I essentially reflected upon, I tried to like amplify my
like
anxiety.
Enhance.
Yeah, I was like, all right, this is me when I'm so depressed.
Channeling my most depressed, anxious self.
That's right. And yeah. It was hard, honestly, to go from that place to really try to put myself in that headspace and not just be pretending that I'm in that headspace. And then to go to supportive director mode. I had some emotional whiplash through that process.
Oh, I'm sure.
Like really trying to embody that and then being like, okay, all right, yeah, that was great. Okay, let's try to da da da.
Yeah. I can't even imagine. The way you're describing channeling a character is so fascinating and impressive to me, because I've never like acted in anything. And it always impresses me when actors can really like get into a character that's just like so not them. I know you played yourself, but I just want you to explain like how, like the art of acting, like how do you actually channel someone? Does it require like a shit ton of studying of that type of person? Are you like, what are you telling yourself when you're like trying to channel someone that's completely not you?
Yeah, it's a really cool question. I mean, I think it comes down first to spending a lot of time with the material. And then everybody does it differently. For me, I will sit and just imagine. I had a teacher say like, wish, worry, and wonder. And that's essentially what I try to do from the perspective of that the person I am in the story.
Like what their wish is, what their worry is.
Yeah, like I'll be like, as Franklin, it's like, gosh, I hope this girl likes me, and I hope that, you know, I hope I don't freak her out. And what if I try to do this? And what if maybe I should wait before I contact her again? And I'll think about it. I'll try to get as many of those actual thoughts to trigger as possible. And then I'll wish, and I'll go, oh God, it's going to be so great to meet up with her. You know, I wonder what she's like in person. What if she's different than how she is? Is there any chance that she's not who she says she is? Maybe I should ask her to video chat, but I don't want to freak her out. So is there a way I can do it that's not going to alarm her? And I'll ask all of those things to myself. And then I'll also just, you know, try to wonder, and I'll be deliberate with the time I'm spending with this process, where I'll set you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours aside, where I'm not paying attention to anything, and I'm literally, it's like structured daydreaming.
Yeah, it's so bizarre.
Yeah, I'm really trying to develop as much of a relationship to the elements of the story as I possibly can, so that I really have a strong perspective about the story. It's like the extreme sport of like playing pretend, right?
Daydreaming.
I mean, you're essentially playing cops and robbers.
Yeah.
You're playing house as an adult, and you're trying to make it as real for yourself as you possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, ideally, I don't know. I had a teacher say worlds, not words. And this idea that instead of just saying lines, you're connecting to the meaning of all these things less so than you are just saying the line as written. So ideally, when it's going well, you really feel like you're trying to express something, and that you're not having to play pretend. You actually feel these
things. This is how you would actually play in that world.
Yeah, and you feel authentically compelled to express whatever you're expressing. And mm-hmm. I mean, it's odd being an actor. There are people, you know, there are people watching you,
mm-hmm.
and you know that they're trying to understand the story from however you're behaving. And it's easy to get self-conscious. And the only time that you're not going to feel self-conscious is if you're so focused on another thing.
Mm.
And so a lot of the work is just how do you make something more important to yourself than the idea of being liked by the people watching you, or trying to show them how great you are as an actor? How can you almost get so distracted? It's like when you're a little kid and you're playing. When you were so into what you were doing, and if your parent was watching you, you wouldn't notice, you know?
Yeah.
You're trying to kind of get into that headspace of letting something completely capture your attention.
Wow. That is very impressive. I guess when someone's playing someone that I'm just like, I can't even relate to that. Like, I'm sure at one point they couldn't either. So it's always impressive to me. I'm like, how do you get to that point? So yeah. Very cool. Speaking of acting, I want to talk a little bit about your actors in your movie.
Mm.
How the heck did you go about casting? Specifically, I have to talk about my girl, Claudia. How did you decide on Claudia and the rest of your cast?
It's funny because Claudia Saluski plays Becca,
mm-hmm.
my character's imaginary girlfriend in the movie. And it's
so good.
It's incredible because she's really playing multiple people in the story. You know, she's mm-hmm. playing Franklin's imagined person. She's playing the real Becca that's just totally different than how Franklin's imagining. And then in a way, she's also playing Franklin's dad. And she's changing and having to navigate all of that through the story.
Mm-hmm.
When I first met Claudia, I didn't know a ton about her, but she just had clearly invested so much energy into preparing the material. She had such a specific take, and she was also so collaborative and thoughtful mm-hmm. about the story, and really got the joke. And I could tell she had a genuine enthusiasm for the story.
Mm-hmm.
And so it felt kind of like you know, we auditioned a ton of people for that role, but there, she just had. It's a very vulnerable thing to fall in love with a story because you might not get it. Mm-hmm. It might not go your way, I could tell she had fallen in love with the story in a way that is really appealing for a filmmaker. Mm-hmm. It's also funny. My dad's name in real life is Claudio.
No way.
Which is pretty weird. I mean, Claudia and Claudio are already kind of
that's
unusual
crazy
names.
Yeah. I feel like I don't know that many Claudias.
No.
Wow. Okay. That's fun.
I know.
Little fun fact.
I know.
It kind of reminds me of like when someone's hiring someone in the corporate world, they just want someone like ultimately that gets the company.
Totally.
Or like gets the startup.
Oh, that's interesting.
More
yeah,
than
I
like.
I thought about it.
You know
one,
what I mean? Then than just like plays the role well.
That's
right. Because like anyone can like fake their resume or like do a good audition.
Right,
I mean,
right.
I don't know. I don't want to speak for anyone, but like someone that just gets you
totally.
Or like gets the company and sees the vision for the startup to me is like who you want.
Yeah.
On board.
Totally. I mean, you're building a team.
Yeah. And you're making a company, like
are.
A little
you're
mini
making
company.
A company.
Yeah. Okay. So she was like essentially your fake love interest mm-hmm. on the movie. I want to talk a little bit about this. It's like my naive, like normal person self asking, like, what's it like having to kiss someone that's like in a committed relationship? Like, how does that go about when you're like an actor in real life? Like, are you is that awkward? Like, what's it like filming, kissing and or sex scenes? I feel like I just don't know. Like, I'm like,
yeah, I mean,
is it super awkward on set?
I don't think it's awkward. No, I mean, everybody is a professional. You're all agreeing to, you're playing pretend and mm-hmm. you've all agreed to a very specific way of executing the story. We also hired an intimacy coordinator.
Mm-hmm. What does that even mean?
So it's somebody to basically, it's almost like a choreographer for these more intimate moments in a story. It's a relatively new position, but it's a really useful one so that you can eliminate all of the awkwardness and mm-hmm. make sure it was very important to me that there was someone like that on set so that everyone felt comfortable that me as the writer, director, actor who's doing
one last thing
all
you have
of this
to worry
intimacy.
About.
That and I wanted anyone that Claudia especially to have somebody that she could confer with another collaborator
totally.
so that we could really iron this stuff out together and that everyone felt heard because it is really delicate navigating that kind of stuff. Ultimately, you're choreographing it like a dance,
mm-hmm.
So there's nothing unexpected. It feels just different than real intimacy does. It's mm-hmm. not, it feels like you're doing a dance, you know? And
it's like you're following the movements
you're following
of the dance
the movements.
Or the choreography.
Yeah. And you're, you know, I mean, a lot of like sex scenes are the least sexy thing you'll ever do
mm-hmm.
In your life. I mean, I'm very focused on making sure the other person feels comfortable and that, you know, I mean, I feel like real intimacy you're doing with like a sense of abandon. Whereas this is the opposite. You're doing it with extreme caution.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say like, do you ever pick up some like new choreography skills from like being on set and like implement them into real life?
I haven't yet. But.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I feel like I would get so nervous. I don't know, with like all the cameras around. Like you forget about that when you're watching the film.
Right.
Like the amount of people that are on set watching.
Right.
I don't know.
I mean, it's, again, I mean, everybody is ideally a professional and everybody's done it before.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're kind of like, there's really specific protocol that we followed where it would be a closed set. We'd clear everyone out so that we could really create a space where we all felt more comfortable.
More comfortable.
But it's, it's a delicate thing. And I think because everyone is being so aware of navigating that situation, it's less intense than, mm-hmm.
than you'd think.
Okay, last two questions in regards to being a filmmaker. What advice would you have to, like, your younger self, like an aspiring, you know, filmmaker, little James, that's at USC right now, and they're like, I don't know how I'm going to get a job. I don't know anyone. Don't, like, just moved to LA or whatever. Like, what advice would you give that person in regards to, like, how, where you are right now, someone that's, like, their dream spot? So what advice would you give to them?
The filmmaker Mark Duplass did a keynote speech in 2015 at South by Southwest where the main headline was the cavalry is not coming. This idea that nobody is going to come and give you the opportunity that you're hoping they'll give you. It's just not going to happen.
Wow.
And you have to proceed as if it's not going to happen. I think when I was at USC, I was auditioning. I was very hopeful. I would have told myself, like, you don't actually have to do that. You can, like, you should start writing and directing a lot more now, and you should really try to keep track of what you're into and enthusiastic about, and then be hyper deliberate about your time and trying to craft things connected to what you're excited about and making sure that you're creating the space in your life to explore things that you're really inspired by, and then just making things and failing and getting, you know, trying things and failing and adjusting and learning. It's easy to just be a film critic and to watch things and to break down what you do and don't like. And I think there's value there, but ultimately you have to be doing that with your own efforts so you can understand just workflow wise. Like, I mean, I see it as like, I'm not necessarily like I every film I'm trying to make the best film I can, but I see it again as like a practice more than I do like a each thing being just standalone, like I
the one big performance.
Yeah, like I look at it like a practice. Like I do the thing that I think is going to be the best for this particular project, and then I reflect upon how that effort went, and then I kind of recalibrate and adjust, knowing that I'm not going to be right a lot of the time, but that a lot of, you know, throughout the process you have opportunities to adjust and get more honest with yourself
and get better. I feel like the more movies you make or the more videos or whatever it is, like, you'll inevitably get better.
It's like it's almost like creative archery in where, like, you shoot, you're like, oh, I missed, I'm like too high, and then you kind of adjust the bow. It feels like it's like an more extended version of that.
Wow. Okay. I love that. Okay. Last question is to, like, go along theme with the pod. What are you doing to make moves right now? Are you writing something else? Can you give us a sneak peek?
Yeah. I have a couple movies that I'm really enthusiastic about. And then I'm working with a company to, we're going to write a show together. I'm going to write a show for them.
Oh, wow.
Which I'm excited about.
Congrats. That's amazing.
Thank you. Yeah.
So exciting.
I'm really excited. And yeah, I'm acting in a movie next month, which I'm really looking forward
to. And you already filmed it and everything?
No.
You're starting it.
Yeah. Yes. I'm going next month.
That's so fun.
Yeah. It'll be cool. And I don't know. I mean, so it's a mixture of, like, writing and preparing for that. And, yeah, those are the moves that I'm currently making, and I hope someday soon someone shoots money in my face with a,
yeah, with a money for gun. Your next movie.
Yeah,
here's the budget.
Yeah.
Okay, where can everyone follow you and watch the movie I Love My Dad? It's so freaking good, guys. You have to watch it.
I'm on Instagram as James Morosini, and you can find I Love My Dad on Amazon and Apple and anywhere that you can rent or buy movies online.
I rented mine on YouTube.
Oh, there you go.
So cool. The more you know. Definitely go watch the movie. Follow James. I guess, you know, DM him if you like the movie. I'm giving you unsolicited DMs right now.
I look forward to it.
Yeah, go watch it. And thanks so much for coming on the show. We learned so much today.
This was so fun.
Yeah, you were great. I'm very impressed with your creative process. So excited to see your future projects.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, awesome. All right. Bye, guys. Make someone's day this week. Peace.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.